Hello, listeners. You're listening to the Nation's Blind Podcast. This is Anil Lewis breaking our cadence by opening up the podcast. And I'm here with
Melissa Riccobono. How are you, Anil?
See, now we have to get everybody to it was my opening more dynamic and engaging? I doubt it.
Yeah, and A. Lewis at NFB.org or podcast@NFB.org. Please send us your comments and your feedback.
Well, that'd be awful if that's when we get all the traffic, right? That would be crazy. But in answer to your question, I'm feeling quite well. And yourself?
I'm doing fine,
awesome.
Actually.
Yeah. Awesome. I love when you go back and forth. So, yeah, I'm doing good. And yourself? And you go back and forth and nobody's really listening to anybody's answer. But my other favorite piece is you say, how you doing? Someone says, not really good. Oh, that's good. Have a great day. Like, no one's listening to those responses.
But I always listen to you, Anil.
Well, thank you. And I listen to you, too.
Well, thank Melissa. You.
And hopefully our listeners are listening to us on this episode of the Nation's Blind Podcast, where we're going to be talking about technology.
Yes, technology. Yeah. You can't live with it.
And
you can't live without it.
Okay.
Or it's great. Mm-hmm. Except when it doesn't work.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I have to admit, though, in reflecting the other day when I was writing a blog post about the upcoming M-Enabling conference, just the cell phone itself, you know, seeing how it's evolved from just that little device that you could take out and make a phone call to being like the central focus of everything that I do related to my professional and personal life.
Oh, I know.
It's crazy.
You know, can I tell you a story about me as a weird child?
Yes, as long as you started with once upon a time.
Once upon a time,
mm-hmm.
I was a weird child. And I actually loved carrying around either a 9-volt battery
Just the battery. Okay.
Or a large rectangular eraser. You know, one of those just flat, smooth erasers that you get.
Okay.
And I would pretend that it was a telephone, a television,
Melissa
a radio.
Riccobono invented the mobile cell phone.
I tell you what. it was quite a couple of years ago, actually, but I realized as I'm swiping on my flat iPhone screen and tapping, and I'm like,
"You have a 9-volt battery
flashbacks.
Wait a minute. Flashbacks.
I invented this. Had I just been smarter, I could be rich right now."
But it's not too late. It's so weird.
It's just so weird that I don't know. I was ahead of my time, I guess.
There you go.
But that's what we carry around. We carry around a television, a radio, a phone, a calendar, a note taker, and it's just.
So now what we need is for some innovative person out there to create a mobile smartphone that looks like a 9-volt battery or an eraser. That'll bring us back full circle, right?
That's okay. I kind of like it the size that it is. I think the 9-volt might be a little too small.
And the eraser a little too large, yeah.
Especially to hold up to your ear. Well, the eraser's probably, but again, if you really want to see the screen, it'd be a little small.
If it was shaped like an eraser, you might get in trouble, though, because you might get two of them and start clapping them together.
Oh, no, not that kind of eraser.
Oh, okay.
Like, not a blackboard eraser, like a rubber.
Oh, okay.
Flat,
like on a pencil?
But the flat ones.
Oh, okay. I understand.
The flat rubber ones.
Got you.
Yeah.
Got you.
Yeah.
About the size of a 9-volt battery.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yes. But smooth, you know, well, not smoother, but anyway.
I got you.
The worst part about the 9-volt battery, though, you know, eventually they started to corrode. So, you just really couldn't carry it around all that long.
All right. So let's get this train back on the tracks.
Okay.
So,
we're back on the track.
We asked you guys to give us some feedback on some technology.
And thank you. You did.
Yes, that was really impressive. The social media traffic on this particular topic, which makes sense since it was a technology topic, got a lot of feedback. So we appreciate you guys for doing that. But, you know, we have to make sure that in every discussion that we have around technology, that we focus on making sure that individuals recognize that you have to possess a fundamental skill set. You know, technology should not be the end-all be-all of how you can independently do something. I always make the analogy of when I was growing up, my mom, she never let me use a calculator until I learned the multiplication tables.
Right.
And I think it's important for us to note that. And it's not, you know, people point out, oh, that's the NFB out there being pro, you know, Braille, long white cane. And it's not a zealot position statement. It's just a fact that these items, these innovative technologies that definitely enhance our ability to be independent, are battery dependent. And so you need to have a fallback just in case the battery is not working or the signal that you're using for that GPS innovative intervention is not there. You have to have that fallback. And the extension of that is good fundamental skills around travel and Braille, all those other pieces, just enhance your ability to exploit the technology. you can do so much more with the technology when you also complement that with a good blindness skill set.
You can, and nothing ever is going to replace confidence.
Mm-mm.
You can have all the technology at your disposal, the GPS, anything else, and if you really do not feel confident enough to leave your house and travel with that cane and get out there in the world, all the technology is not going to make a difference.
That's correct.
So you know, we need it. We need it all. We're so lucky to live in an age right now where technology is changing the landscape for everybody.
Yeah, and even of course, in the playing field in a real way.
Yeah, and it is. And we don't want to be left behind. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're going to fight for technology all day long, but we need to fight for those skills as well, and that confidence and that ability to truly make decisions. Mm-hmm. Because, call me old-fashioned, there are just some things that I still find easiest to do with a reader. And yeah, an old-fashioned human being, maybe not old-fashioned, depending on who I'm using, but an actual person who I can sit face-to-face with and say, what's this envelope? Oh, that's an ad for such and such. Okay,
yeah.
Toss it. You know, can you help me fill out this paperwork? Yeah, maybe I could fight really hard and get it accessible. And then mm-hmm. I guess, you know, I have. So my daughter just recently had an appointment and I was talking to the office on the phone and they said, well, we'll send you paperwork. And I said, well, could you send it to me electronically? And they actually did.
Mm-hmm.
And that was wonderful. But, you know, my son has a interview coming up for a camp he wants to participate in this summer. And the paperwork is in PDF. I can actually read it, but it's not mm-hmm. a fillable PDF. I mean, could I ask them to send it in a different format? I guess I could, but you know what? I'm probably just going to sit down with a reader and have her fill it out so I can yeah. bring it to the interview like everybody else. I just yeah. don't want to fight about it. So,
And that's really key, because what we try to get people to understand, there's not an either or.
Exactly.
It's having all those tools in yep. the toolbox so you can determine how you're going to address a problem or how you're going to deal with the situation. You're not restricted to just that one intervention.
Yep. That's yeah. right. That's right.
So I went and categorized some of the responses that we got from our social media team around your comments around what technology you like. So I'm going to do a shameless plug for the NFB technology first, because I think one of the things I like to highlight is we work proactively to make sure that we partner in the development of technology in a way that helps blind people live the lives they want. And one of the first ones, of course, is the KNFB Reader. Which is an app on an iPhone that I could snap a photo of printed material and it will read it to me and synthesize speech. But just to really highlight what I was talking about, how you can really enhance the use of the technology through, you know, blindness skills. Now, when I go to meetings that don't provide me accessible formatted materials,
mm-hmm.
I can take my KNFB reader out. I can snap a photo of the agenda and any other related documents. And then I can pair my Bluetooth refreshable keyboard, and I have a Braille copy of the agenda and all the documents through the KNFB reader. So
yeah, I could have Braille display.
Through my Braille display, yeah. Exactly. And you know, of course, the technology would allow me to read it, but now with that Braille display, I can do so much more with it than just listening to it. So one of the other pieces, too, still sticking with the NFB and our desire to make sure that we can live the lives we want, is the NFB Newsline, which is a definite transformative piece of technology that allows individuals to use their smartphone, along with other devices, a telephone, computer, to read over 500 newspapers, magazines, and publications. And the same here. The app that I use, the Newsline application on my phone, I pair my refreshable Braille display, and wow, I got a Braille copy of the New York Times right there in front of me. So,
and I think about that. I think about being in high school and having to read a news article a week for different classes, and mm-hmm. it was always my mom that would sit down with me and read the article. God bless her. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And we always had to then go over, okay, that was an interesting article. How do I spell this person's name? How do I spell this place in the world? Or how mm-hmm. do I spell? Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes I would think about all the ones I wanted her to spell right off the bat. And other times I'd be sitting there writing my summary a little bit later and thinking, oh, shoot, I'm just going to have to do the best I can because I forgot to ask her how to spell such
yeah.
and such.
Yeah.
And now, my goodness, kids in high school, kids in middle school, they just can read in Braille if they have that skill, and they don't have to ask. They
yeah.
can just know how to spell all that. And that's yeah. amazing.
Talk about
to me.
Evening the playing field and yes. giving real access to information. That's just key.
Yes.
So I'll breathe through the other. I mean, we have the NFB Connect. Anyone who's out there who's really committed to being involved in what we call the nation's blind, the organized movement of the blind, you should download the NFB Connect app, because it's the portal to so much information around what we do as an organization. some of the other pieces are the Polaris Braille display and the iPhone or the iPad Braille display. I think they may have been talking about the Braille Note. But yeah, again, Braille complementing the technology. Someone, I don't know, I didn't get a chance to research this. There's an application called Mint, which is supposed to be a financial application tool. I'm glad that that's accessible. We have Uber and Lyft. Those are transformative technologies. They really allow us to get where we want to go.
Yeah.
And everybody that I know talks to Alexa on a regular basis. I hope I just woke up everybody's machine. Alexa, what time is it? So now you guys know what time it is that you're listening to the Nation's Blind podcast. The thing that was very interesting was the amount of mention to technologies that are, you know, kind of vision, virtual vision, vision replacement, vision substitutes, that kind of thing. I love what Dr. Maurer says to make it easier for everyone. When we're talking about like devices like the Aira, Aira is a system that you can use glasses, your phone, to be connected to a virtual agent that will see what you see through your glasses or your phone and help you with directions, help you read information. And, you know, there's been some back and forth around the efficacy of that. As long as it's done in the way that's responsible, and we make sure that people recognize that it's not a substitute for independent travel or the ability to access information independently, that it's a complement, there's a win-win there. And I love the way that Dr. Maurer says he's been renting vision all of his life. So whether it be just the human reader in his space or just the Aira or any of the others that are using the remote access of people's vision, it's still a tool. It's just an extension or an expansion of what, you know, blind people have been doing for years. So there's the Aira. We talked about, not talked about, but we got information about the Seeing AI app from Microsoft, which has a host of different components. The Be My Eyes app, and then also the Microsoft Soundscape. So a lot of technology investigation or participation or engagement around those things that are kind of virtual or electronic vision, which I think is so important that we're actively vetting those particular technologies, because if we leave it to others who don't really understand the real, you know, life of a blind person, I mean, they'll come up with some technology that they think is so life changing that has no, you know, utility for us at all.
Right.
So I'm very pleased that you guys really weighed in. Hopefully we can continue to facilitate dialogue around that and be proactive in the continued development and design and enhancement of these technologies.
Yeah, and speaking of the vision technologies, Chris Danielson had a chance to sit down with Chancey Fleet to talk about some of those technologies and her take on sort of the pros and cons, what they're useful for, what they might not be useful for.
I love Chancey, and she's going to give it to you straight, no chaser.
That's right. Yeah. That's Chancey. So should we take a listen to that interview?
Let's do it.
All right. You're listening to the Nation's Blind Podcast.
This is Chris Danielson, and I have the privilege of talking with Federationist, who is in the great state and city of New York, and her name is Chancey Fleet. Hi, Chancey. Welcome to the Nation's Blind Podcast.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing all right. It's a little chilly up here in New York, a little rainy. I don't think spring has actually made it here yet, but we're making the best of it.
It hasn't really made it to Baltimore either. I mean, we keep having these days that are warm and make us think that spring is going to come, but then it actually doesn't really happen. But anyway, enough of that. First of all, let's establish your background here. You are a technology educator with a library in New York. Is that correct?
That's right. I do technology education with accessibility in mind, individually and in groups. And I work with people who are blind and sighted folks that are learning for all kinds of professional and personal reasons. And it's really fun to work in a library setting where we can explore technology and welcome everyone to collaborate together in an environment that's kind of low pressure and sales free.
Excellent. That sounds like a great thing. Sounds like a really fun job. So the reason that we wanted to have you on the podcast in particular is because of your technology expertise and because you wrote a really good article in the Braille Monitor. It was last summer, I think, sometime that it was published, talking about the new hot sort of category of technology that is available to blind people now. And you, I think, described them as visual interpreters or visual interpretation. So tell us a little bit about what we mean by that. And, you know, just for the listeners who aren't really familiar with that category. And then we'll talk about what, you know, some of the specifics of that.
So when I use the term visual interpreter, which is kind of a new term, and it's only one of many that are kind of flying around right now, I'm talking about apps, because for now, at least, I think they're all apps that use your phone's camera, and in some way they capture visual information and render it as something more useful to us than visual information. There are lots of other terms out there. Visual assistants is one. Remote sighted assistants is another. The reason why I like to talk about visual interpreters is because our culture already understands interpreters for people who are deaf. And I wanted to situate this new technology in terms of something that we do already understand. And like interpreters for the deaf, apps that provide visual interpretation support us. They give us information. They work for us. They're directed by us. And they don't replace our skills. So if you break down this category, what I first thought of when I wrote the article for the Braille Monitor as visual interpreter apps were ones that use human beings in some way, human intelligence, to parse visual information. And we can talk a little bit more about the apps in that category, but mostly Aira, Be My Eyes, Be Specular, and TapTapC, although that one uses a combination of machine vision and people power. But visual interpreters can also include computer vision and AI. So the biggest new one on the scene since I wrote this article, obviously everybody knows it probably, is Seeing AI, which is from Microsoft. And Seeing AI is artificial intelligence. It has some beta channels that identify scenes and people, and I haven't really been incorporating those heavily into my daily life yet, although I can see the potential 2 or 3 years out. Boy, would I like to be able to find an electric outlet or a trash can or an empty chair on demand. Now they're just kind of fun curiosities. I remember when it came out on my birthday at National Convention last year, I think the people feature was supposed to help you identify your colleagues, but most of us were just like turning it around and taking selfies and then like getting really happy or really upset, depending how old it said we were and what gender it said we were. But what I have found really useful with Seeing AI is the ability to read printed material on the fly, not necessarily whole pages, but little labels, the spices in my kitchen, toiletries, signs, just incidental environmental text. Seeing AI handles that really well.
It has that really cool short text mode that, you know, literally you wave the camera in front of something. If it sees text, it gives you an idea of what the text is. And usually that's enough for me anyway, to at least know whether that's the thing that I wanted to deal with or not. So that's a great feature of Seeing AI. So let's talk a little bit about, you said something about these in general, before we get into more particular, you know, more of the particular apps and particularly the ones that use human assistance. So there's been a lot of philosophical discussion about these because, you know, we're very, especially in the National Federation of the Blind, we're very focused on our independence and our ability to do things for ourselves. So you talked about these being directed by us and not replacing our skills. So talk a little bit more about that and the importance of that and how you think these really fit into our lives as blind people.
Any of these technologies and most technologies in life are just tools, and we can find ways to use them in ways that slow us down, degrade our public image, and, you know, don't do us any favors. Or with most tools, we can find ways to collaborate in meaningful ways and enhance our lives and learn and grow and be productive. The internet is that way. You could say that film and radio are that way. Any technology you can think of can be used in ways that are good for you and everybody around you, or the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
I like to think of visual interpreters as something that you incorporate into your workflow and something that you think about with a combination of like good communication skills and task analysis. So for example, let's say that you do have some spices in your kitchen and you know, we all should just braille things the moment that we get them, but sometimes we don't, we get really busy. So I could call Ira every time that I want to find the cinnamon. Cinnamon's a terrible example because you can probably smell the cinnamon. It's right. Very distinct. But I could call Ira every time I'm looking for something, or every time that I'm going to set my oven dial, or every time that I'm going to use the microwave. Or I could call Ira once and have my labeling tools ready and know how I want to abbreviate things and do the job and then benefit from the accessibility moving forward. I could, what's another example?
Well, you could try waving your phone around with seeing AI in short text mode and try to find, all those answers. And you could do that every time, or you could try to identify the barcodes with it every time. But
right, exactly. But then you have to go get your phone and it's a drain on your battery and it takes a little bit longer. So it's just a matter of continually noticing the way that you use things and being kind of mindful and always asking yourself before you start, what kind of tools might I need? What kind of questions do I want to formulate? What's my plan and what steps am I planning on taking? And then just continually kind of being aware of yourself. When are you feeling in flow? Like you feel like you have a good pace, you're happy with the way that you're performing, and then just do more of those things. When are you feeling frustrated? When are you feeling slowed down? When do you notice things are taking longer than maybe they should? That's a clue that you might be wanting to use another method. I've learned a lot about my communication style by using Ira and Be My Eyes and noticing what kinds of verbal direction and communication get the results I want and what kinds confuse people. And it's not always easy to look at yourself that way, but it's an important thing to do, especially when you're working, when you're collaborating with other human beings. This is a new technology, it's a new medium, but it's an old interaction because really it's the same type of interaction as working with a reader in your physical environment or working with a shopping assistant. And like readers or shopping assistants, sometimes we're really compatible, sometimes we're super not, and we need to maybe match up with another partner. And on the other hand, sometimes we're really effective in the way that we communicate and we provide a lot of positive feedback that leads to more of the results that we want. Sometimes we get all wound up in the moment and we're frustrated and we don't communicate effectively. And that's when the wheels fall off the whole endeavor.
So let's talk about the differences between and some of the advantages and disadvantages and just as briefly as you can. And I would refer people back to your Monitor article, but let's talk about Ira versus Be Specular and Be My Eyes. One of the things is that Ira, of course, is a paid app and we should be upfront about that.
So Ira is a subscription-based service. They offer a way to use it hands-free using smart glasses. I personally, for now, prefer to use it with my phone. Ira can do a couple of things that the other services can't do. For one thing, the agents are trained professionals and they are bound by their company to confidentiality. Accidents may still happen. We're dealing with human beings here, but you have recourse if there's a confidentiality breach. And so depending on your comfort level and what you decide, you might be more comfortable handling things that involve your personal records, sensitive material using Ira. Ira is also able to take photos on your behalf. So I love learning more about framing effective photos and getting real-time feedback and knowing that when I've captured a photo, it's one that I can be proud to put up on social media or include in a PowerPoint presentation. I'm still doing all the physical work and positioning of taking that photo. I'm still finding the interesting thing to take the picture of, but I'm getting precise, real-time feedback about what's working and what's not working in that photo. And that's something that I really appreciate.
Excellent. And Ira can also, because they have a dashboard, they're sitting there looking at Google Earth and stuff like that as well. So they can give you real-time information about where you are and what's near you in a way that obviously, if you're using a volunteer through Be My Eyes, they can do that to a certain extent, and they may or may not have that technology handy, but they may be more limited to what you're directly seeing, whereas an IRA agent is not necessarily.
IRA can also help you, depending on the agent. A lot of the agents are comfortable with TeamViewer and other cloud collaboration software. So one time I had a presentation I needed to deliver on a web platform that was totally inaccessible, and I filed reports about it, which you should always do. After you solve your problem with IRA, please still follow up about accessibility. It was called On24, and the hosts of the presentation were more than happy to help me advance my slides and take questions, but I didn't feel comfortable with that. I wanted that autonomy. I wanted the person moving my slides to be working for me, not for the organization that I was presenting to. And so I had Ira come in with TeamViewer and help drive that On24 slideshow and help me understand my questions. I acknowledged that my interpreter was there virtually with me, and they did that. I also have 3D printing software and tactile graphics software that has some inaccessible elements. And so I can sit at my keyboard and do most of the heavy lifting, but then when a little accessibility problem occurs, rather than stopping the whole show and waiting until I've got someone who can sit with me, I think it's actually easier to work virtually with someone, because then I'm still in front of the keyboard. I'm still doing everything. And we're totally, when it works well, it's like jazz. We just work as a team, and I do my parts and they do their parts, and it's great.
Okay, so that's IRA, some of the advantages that it has, some of the things that it's possible to do with. Let's talk about Be My Eyes and a little bit about Be Specular as well, and see what they have to offer.
So Be My Eyes is totally free and volunteer powered. It's also a live audio video connection. So you're paired with someone that speaks the same language as you. What I love about Be My Eyes is you might get connected to someone in some totally other part of the world, especially if it's really early or late at night. They're available 24 hours, which IRA is not. Their agents or their volunteers are just regular people that want to spend a little bit of time popping into your reality and helping out. So they're less polished sometimes, and they're not bound to be objective, and they're not bound to be confidential. So you don't want to show them anything sensitive or upsetting. But on the other hand, they're often like really excited to be getting the call, and that enthusiasm shows through. And so it's fun to work with them if you're doing something scenic, or you're in a museum, or you're on vacation, or you just got flowers. Like moments that where a little bit of subjectivity and whimsy and randomness is welcome in your life, or even if you're just having a really boring day and you want to have something a little random, a little unexpected, Be My Eyes does that. And that sounds really hippy dippy, but I think that is not just a bug. I think it's a feature.
No, I don't disagree with that. And it, you know, maybe it gives you a little bit of permission. I haven't used it as much probably as you have, but I feel like it gives me a little bit more permission, not to be inappropriate at all, but to be a little bit more informal, a little bit more fun. Exactly. You know, and because you're just dealing with another person who's interested in being helpful, but there's not sort of the same set of expectations, but that can be liberating in some circumstances. And you could talk about, okay, do these, you know, what do you think? Does this outfit really go together or not? You know?
Well, that's a good transition to Be Specular, because Be Specular is my favorite one for dealing with that. Because for one thing, Be Specular does one thing that these other companies don't do. It lets you keep your access to your own questions and answers. You get to keep your data and your history. And I think that's really powerful. So if you got some detailed information that you might want to refer back to later, you can with Be Specular. You can't yet with IRA or Be My Eyes, although I hope that that will change. But the real magic of Be Specular is that you can ask subjective questions, like, please describe this blouse. What would you wear it with? what kind of statement is this piece of jewelry making? Or is the person in this picture making a funny face, or would they be happy to have it on social media, do you think? It's really easy for one person to give you an answer that's subjective and you might feel later has misled you. But Be Specular lets you answer, lets you ask those questions either using text or audio, and you get like 6 or 7 responses back. And if you hear the same kind of information 5 or 6 times, you can start to build a picture from those multiple data points, and you can make an informed decision that 6 or 7 people are noticing the same thing. It's probably a common perception. On the other hand, those 6 or 7 responses will highlight different things that different people have noticed. So we can't ever completely control for subjectivity, and we wouldn't want to. It would be a less colorful world. But by gathering those multiple responses, we can build our own original opinion about what we're going to react to and care about.
That's that sounds like a great feature, because a lot of times it is helpful in any situation, not just about visual stuff, to get a multiplicity of perspectives and opinions. And for the kinds of situations that we're talking about, thinking about clothes, thinking about jewelry, thinking about even different interpretations of an artwork, for example, maybe would be an even better example. So this is great. Chancey, thank you so much. This is a useful discussion to have. I'm sure it's a discussion that we'll keep having as possibly more of these solutions And as the solutions themselves evolve, you know, the existing ones and the new ones, it's a discussion to have. But I just want to go back to the idea to close with that it really is a thing we can learn to do as blind people in a way that is authentic to us and maintaining our independence while still taking advantage of really the wealth of information that we have access to now that we didn't have access to in quite this way before.
Well, thank you so much for this opportunity. And I look forward to meeting with everybody in a couple months and having these conversations in person in Orlando.
Absolutely. Convention is coming. All right, Chancey, thank you very much. You're listening to the Nation's Blind Podcast.
This is Melissa Riccobono, and I'm here with Chris Danielson. How are you, Chris?
I'm doing great, Melissa. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Oh, that was a great interview with Chancey. You always do a very nice job with these interviews.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. But because we've been doing these types of interviews, I really haven't been able to sit down with you for a while in the same studio. So it's nice to be back. And I know that you're here for a purpose. And what is that purpose?
Well, I'm here, first of all, glad to be back with you in the studio as well. But the reason I'm here is because we have news. I get to do an In the News segment
in
this
the news.
Time.
All yes. Right. We have news. Well, let's get started. What is in the news?
So the big, one big item of news is that people may remember that we sued the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services a while back because all those cool Medicare notices that you get that say they didn't pay for something and you have 10 days to appeal, except you get it 5 days later and you read it and when your reader comes and it's already too late and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, that's not cool.
Yeah, not cool at all. So now all of that will be accessible. They are implementing a plan. We've settled the lawsuit, and CMS, which is the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, is supposed to implement a plan about these Medicare notices. A lot of blind people depend on Medicare. And so, first of all the – it's important to say that all the regular benefit information, just the general information that everybody gets, will be in accessible formats. As a matter of fact, some of the major publications are already available on Medicare.gov as accessible ebooks. So that's one thing that's happening. But the other thing is that you'll be able to request, each of us as individuals will be able to request that our personal Medicare notices about our own benefits and payments and things like that be sent to us in an accessible format. And if Medicare takes any excessive amount of time in getting us a notice in an accessible format, then they have to add that time to the to our appeal time so that we don't lose our appeal rights because it took them forever to get an accessible notice to us.
Well,
so.
That is wonderful. And I mean, great job to us. And this is just a great example of how we really make a difference for blind people across the country.
Absolutely.
So that's really exciting.
Absolutely.
Wonderful. And I'm assuming that there'll be a press release about this in our show notes. So if people want more information, they can look at that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great. We will include the big press release that announces this and gives the details, all the cool bullet points that say exactly what's supposed to happen. And obviously, we'll have to continue to be vigilant to make sure this happens. But it's a big, important victory. Because obviously so many of us either depend on this already or will depend on it at some point. And there's really just no excuse for government information like this not to be accessible to us.
That is completely true. There's also some movement on our other legislative priorities.
Right. There's a lot going on in the legislative area, particularly going back to the subject of our podcast. This month, we have the Accessible Technology Affordability Act. Say that three times fast.
No.
And that is moving along. It's picked up more co-sponsors recently. So just to remind everyone, the idea behind this is that blind folks would get a tax credit when we purchase technology that we need. So if you need to purchase a refreshable Braille display or need to re-up your screen reader license or buy a new screen reader, although who needs to buy screen readers anymore? Well, I shouldn't say that, but some people are using free screen readers.
Yeah, which is super exciting.
Right, exactly. So, and having good success with them. But of course, there's the argument that JAWS and some of the other programs that we pay for may be more robust in certain features. So we'll have to see how all that plays out. But anyway, the point is that this technology can be expensive. And so it's useful to have – it will be useful if we can get this passed and we're achieving more momentum on that. I think it just got three new co-sponsors as we're recording this.
Wow.
And if we're able to pass that, then we'll be able to get a tax credit for the purchase of that technology.
That would be amazing. That would be a really big win, and I'm glad that there's some movement.
Right. And there's also movement on – The Time Act, which is not technology related, but which is our effort, of course, to get rid of the practice of paying sub-minimum wages to people with disabilities. So that's got some new co-sponsorship and some new momentum, too. And we'd really like to see that pass. I'm sure that Greg Harper, who's the big force in Congress behind it, the Republican of Mississippi, you know, he's going to retire.
Oh.
So I'm sure he would love to see the Time Act pass because he's such a big champion of it.
Oh, that would be a wonderful thing. And we've been working on this for so many years. It would just be nice to have a victory under our belt and be able to move on to other things.
Right. So.
And then we had our Marrakesh Treaty hearing as well, right?
Wow. Right. So the Senate Foreign Relations Committee had a hearing about the Marrakesh Treaty. And this is the treaty that the United States has signed but not yet ratified that would allow basically accessible copies of books like Braille copies or audio copies to be imported into the U.S. from other countries and also allow us to export books to developing countries where they may not have as many books in accessible formats. So it's a good deal both ways. It will benefit Americans, especially if you're studying a foreign language and you need materials in that language that have been produced in a country where they actually speak that language as a primary language. Scott LaBarre testified at the hearing and talked about how he had wanted to double major in political science and Spanish, I believe it was, in college, and wasn't able to do that because he couldn't get Spanish materials, even though they had been produced. It was illegal to import them into the United States.
Right.
So Marrakesh is a big deal. And what happened was the Foreign Relations Committee had a hearing, and we'll put the link if you weren't able to be there, and several Federationists were there. But if you weren't able to be there, and you were there, weren't you, Melissa?
I was there. It was a great hearing. It was funny because everyone was so friendly, so complimentary, and the comment sort of all the way through was, you know, we don't often have hearings like this in this committee. We often tackle much more controversial issues. This one seems like it should just be a slam dunk. Now, you know, we do need the supermajority. We will need we need a favorable vote from the committee. Is there another committee as well, or is it just Foreign Relations?
Well, it's Foreign Relations and Judiciary.
Judiciary. So we're going to have another hearing, I'm assuming, with Judiciary at some point, or will they just take the evidence from the Foreign Relations? I don't know how that all works.
I have no idea.
But then we need the 2/3 from the actual Senate to ratify this. I mean, this really has support from across the aisle. There were Republicans speaking very favorably. The administration is for this. So, I mean, let's just hope that this can get through. But the hearing itself was just, it was great, but it was a little bit funny because everybody just kept saying, but, you know, usually this isn't how hearings go.
Yeah.
It was almost like kumbaya, you know, everybody was just so happy.
Yeah, when you hear about, and for that reason, it probably didn't make CNN.
Right, exactly.
They only want to, or any of the other cable news channels, because they only want to highlight things that are controversial. And it looks like this may not be controversial. Now, the other piece that has to happen, and there will be a vote on this soon, I can't remember the exact date. Maybe this is what the Judiciary Committee has to vote on. There's implementing legislation for the Marrakesh Treaty. So even if we ratify it, it does actually require some minor changes to our copyright laws.
Gotcha.
So that also has to pass, and that has to pass both the Senate and the House. So we will be working on this for a little while longer, but it does look like it's on its way to ratification, which is great because it's going to be such a huge benefit, and it's going to be a way for us in America to help other blind people who may not have. I mean, we talk about how few books we have access to, but yet in the United States, we're in a relatively good situation compared to some other places in the world. So it's really a great deal all around, and it will help blind people in the United States and all over the world. So go Marrakesh, and keep your eye out for our legislative alerts so that you'll know what you need to do in order to help us make sure this gets over the finish line finally, and that the Marrakesh Express finally makes it home.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Chris. Great news, and really nice to talk with you again.
Nice to talk with you. You're listening to the Nation's Blind Podcast.
Don't you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express? Don't you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express? They're taking me to Marrakesh, all on board.
Well, it's great that we had an In the News segment. It's been a little while, not because we haven't been doing things, but because of just the different format that we've been playing with the podcast. You know, we don't want our listeners to get bored ever. So.
No, well, how could they? How could they get bored?
Well, let's hope they couldn't. Anyway, but it is really exciting about Marrakesh, and I hope that can be ratified soon. That would be a wonderful thing.
All of the legislative work we're doing, I mean, has so much potential for, you know, just enhancing the lives of blind people. And we're glad that our members, and that's what makes it so powerful, are so actively participating and helping us move that agenda forward.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. So the technology piece, again, in our legislation with the, you know, Access Technology Affordability Act. So, sticking with the theme of this particular podcast. So we're doing work on all levels with respect to enhancing and developing technologies that blind people can use to live the lives we want.
And then making it affordable for blind people to do so.
Exactly.
Which is exciting.
Exactly.
So, speaking of technology, again, you had a chance to sit down with President Riccobono and talk about his views on technology. You know, he gave a banquet speech last year at the convention.
Talk about being forward-thinking.
All about technology.
You developed a mobile cell phone, and now he's already predicting the future around technology through his banquet address. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, what can we say?
I'm gonna put that out there in that whole space with Al Gore developing the internet. Melissa Carbono, the mobile phone. Exactly. Yeah, but it was a really good interview. Again, I always like the opportunity to talk to President Carbono. It gives us an opportunity for our members to really get to know him in a real way, even though it's virtual. But I think it's important to understand that there's a man behind the title, and he really has concern, you know, and a commitment to make sure that we as an organization use our talent and our strength, ability, and resources to make sure that we can continue to build a better, more accessible world.
Definitely. Yeah. Let's take a listen to the Presidential Privilege.
You're listening to the Nation's Blind Podcast. This is Anil Lewis, and I'm here with President Mark Riccobono for the Presidential Privilege portion of the Nation's Blind Podcast. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Excellent.
There were some more P's in there.
I have to
watch
go back and
P's
listen
and
to see.
Q's or something.
Okay. All right. Yeah. You stayed away from it's a privilege. I see what you did there.
Yeah.
Well, we'll try better.
Trying to be original.
And that you do. It's convention time, you know.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
We're
going to sing?
No. That's for a later podcast and for a different host. but feel free. No, we'll get you to play the guitar.
Oh,
that'd be pretty awesome. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, we'll talk about that in a future podcast as well. This young man has talent beyond talent. This podcast, we've been talking a lot about technology. We had our listeners contact us with their particular preference of technologies or things that they find exciting. Some of them were a lot of them were vision-centric, you know, from Ira to Be My Eyes and all those different pieces. So I guess to bring all of this home, we can reflect back to last year's national convention where you gave the banquet speech, which was an excellent presentation, by the way. And it talked about technology and integration of technology and the human factors related to technology. But there were two things that kind of stood out to me when I revisited the presentation. You talked about the vision-centric approach, mm-hmm. you know, to the development of technology and how we as an organization balance that with a new pattern of thought. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that so our listeners can get oriented around that particular concept?
Yeah, well, the idea is that in a lot of technology development, especially with specialized technology geared toward blind people, it comes from a vision-centered approach, one that presumes both that the absence of vision is a terrible thing, but that also presumes that blind people have to operate like sighted people. Mm-hmm. And that's really just not authentic to who we are and the way we navigate the world or think about the world. It's not that we don't care about visual imagery or how things look, but that so often in the development, it starts with vision as being the primary focus, or at least the perceived problems with a lack of vision. And the vision-centered approach also presumes that the techniques that blind people use because they look different just aren't effective. So our goal as an organization, and I would say based on our philosophy and experience of as blind people, is that we start with the idea that the experience of blind people is authentic, and when it works, it doesn't have to look the same, feel the same, have the same qualities as the approach that people who can see use.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we know from our experience also that when we start from our authentic point of view, we contribute something very valuable to design as well. There's all sorts of scenarios where vision actually is not helpful. Example I like to use is for quite a while, car manufacturers, for cost and other reasons, moved to touchscreen displays in their cars for everything from the heat and air conditioning to the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, cell phones helped to really raise the question of eyes on the road. And so they started putting physical buttons back into cars, which, you know, why did they take them out in the first place? Obviously, they had them there because functionally, back in the day, that's all you had. But, you know, come to find out that actually when you can just put your hand down on something and touch it without having to take your eyes off the road, it has a benefit. So our new paradigm or the new pattern of thought that we're working toward is if we really are working toward built-in access at the same time, then we also have something to contribute to the design process, not just take from it.
Yeah, and I think that's an important discussion to have, especially with the developers, because when we make the business case that there's value added to accessibility, it, again, shifts the paradigm. That's part of that new pattern of thought.
Mm-hmm.
It's not trying to meet the needs of blind individuals. It's integrating our non-visual access techniques into mainstream technology, which makes it better for everybody.
And I think one of the interesting things going forward is that when you ask which technologies make the biggest difference to blind people, I don't think it's going to be the specialized technologies. I think it's going to be the fact that we have equal access to the mainstream technologies, especially if they include features that we have helped to engineer.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, services like Be My Eyes and on the other side, Aira are valuable because, I mean, there's all sorts of situations where we still need to get access to information where borrowing someone's eyes is really the only viable approach.
Mm-hmm. And in many instances, the most efficient.
Most efficient. And we've been paying for readers and that sort of thing for a long time.
Yeah.
So the challenge for us now in this new space is to make sure blind people are really directing it. And I would say I don't know of any high school in the nation where blind kids are being taught how to use readers, for example, because they have a lot more access to technology than even I had. And so they're not being taught how to direct that assistance. Not learning how to direct it means that the person providing the service or the person with the vision is going to direct it.
And have the control.
And that we don't want either, because that's not actually efficient. You know, I don't want someone to read from the top to the bottom of the page necessarily. So mm-hmm. I have to be able to direct it. I don't want to. If I want some visual information about navigation, I don't want to know about every piece of trash on the ground. Or, although sometimes I do. I may want to know what's off in the distance, but I need to be able to direct that. So that's where we need to think critically about technology, how to use it, how to teach it, not that we should be against it or afraid of it, but we need to be in control of it.
That's a good point. A lot of that comes out in the discussion that Chris had with Chancey earlier in the podcast as well. And you draw a fine point on something we discussed earlier about how it's important to, one, have the fundamental skills to be able to get things done without the necessary use of technology. And then technology becomes something that enhances your ability to do things. And it's not an either or. It's increasing the number of tools that you have in your toolbox. But right. The point that you have about the blind person has to be able to control that tool and be the one that manipulates that tool is very important.
I think people in the general society really see technology as being able to solve special problems for blind people.
Mm-hmm.
But our experience is that access to the mainstream tools at the same time is really where the power is in technology. The specialized tools are helpful, but I think the equal access to all of the tools is really what's going to be transformative about technology for blind people, and then we'll have to decide how much technology we want and how much we don't want.
Exactly.
But everybody in society is dealing with that, whether it's social media or the alerts on your phone, the distractedness. We're all going to have to work through this new era of technology we live in.
Mm-hmm. And expanding on this new pattern of thought, we talked about how increasing the number of tools that are available, controlling those tools. The other thing that the National Federation of the Blind focuses on is creating the infrastructure, the supports in place so that blind individuals actually get the training and education so that they can be the developers of the tools. So not only just benefiting from collaborating with us as an organization, but actually blind individuals developing that next wave of innovative technology.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we have a lot more work to do in teaching blind people how to use mainstream technology. You know, the paradigm in technology is that the companies put stuff out there and you tinker with it to use it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have to do better than that for blind people because the accessibility schemes are so difficult to use. You see some standardization happening amongst screen reading products,
mm-hmm.
but there's a real lack of training on how to use these tools. And so what happens is blind people end up using specialized tools, and I don't think we're as well equipped to compete with only using the specialized tools.
Yeah, and that's why I get so excited about the programming that we do for blind youth that are really putting them in that area of STEM. Mm-hmm. And then they go to work for these mainstream companies, and just the nature of their participating in that development creates a mainstream accessible tool.
And we need blind people working outside of the accessibility area, as you point out, and in design of all sorts. And there's just not enough blind people working in those spaces yet to really have the sort of impact we want. But there are a lot of good examples of where it's working.
Yeah. And I love the fact that we're the catalyst for a lot of that. So let me bounce back a little bit, because we didn't ask you. Do you have a favorite app or technology?
Oh, favorite. Well, you got to just choose one.
Yeah, just one. Well, I don't know if our listeners submitted multiple ones. But
well,
yeah. We'll start with one. But you're the president. You have a privilege.
I know. Well, you know, in terms of technologies, I really do think that for me and what I do every day, just mm-hmm. the whole ecosystem of the iPhone being accessible mm-hmm. out of the box is really what I love.
Yeah.
And that Apple has put some tools together to help developers know how their apps can be accessible. Mm-hmm. I just love the idea that if you want a piece of information about something, you can go and get it, and it's mostly going to be accessible. Not always, and certainly not in all cases, but in many, many cases. So the fact that you can have an all-in-one device, I really find is important.
Yeah, I agree.
That I can get my books from the National Library Service in audio or Braille format, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
But that I can also get my Audible.com or Kindle or iBooks all on the same device. Now, having said that, there's a whole lot of frustrations. You know, I use my iPhone with a Braille display probably, I don't know, 90% of the time.
Yeah.
And I don't want to get on a rant, but I think Apple could do better, much mm-hmm. better, as it relates to Braille implementation. And I'm frustrated when the ability to really operate with Braille mm-hmm. on the iPhone deteriorates. So I wouldn't even say it's a specific app, but just the whole ecosystem, it has changed how we can have access to information, manipulate information, know what's on the calendar, get information about mm-hmm. the buses. I mean,
mm-hmm.
It's not a blindness product, but that I can pull up an app and see that the Charm City Circulator is going to be at its stop in 10 minutes and decide, all right, I'm going to run over there, and it'll actually
be there.
Mostly correct.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
well, I love the way, one, that you took the opportunity to leverage, you know, multiple applications. But two, even more importantly, I like the way that you organically demonstrated, as an organization, we like working with our partners. You, mm-hmm. you talked and highlighted what Apple's done well, but we have a responsibility to be honest with our partners as well. So given that constructive feedback on how the product can become better is our role that we play. So I like that.
Yeah, and until we get to a place where accessibility really is a core value in technology development, it's going to be rocky for a long time. I know there are a lot of people who remember that, you know, there was a time when Apple in the early days had a screen reader and then it didn't. And if you used a Mac, you were stuck. You didn't have anything.
Mm-hmm.
I, in general, think the mainstream accessibility approach is where we want to go. But there are some real questions we have to answer. There's advantages and disadvantages to having third-party applications. You see this on the Google side with pluses and minuses. We're going to have to work through that, and we have to continue to be honest that, you know, if Google decides to make a shift in Google Docs, it may annoy some folks in their workplaces, but it's probably not going to shut them out of access. if
the inaccessibility problem would do for a blind person.
Exactly. And we need accessibility to be understood in that way, that it's not just about providing nice functions. It really means a difference, especially for blind people, because most people do interact with these products visually.
Yeah,
it really does mean included or excluded, and that's where it requires a degree of care.
Yeah. I love the way that the Bank of Speech last year was forward-thinking to a lot of the discussions that are taking place now in a contemporary fashion. So I'm assuming that this year's Bank of Speech is going to be equally as, forward-thinking, visionary.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Very visionary.
Any spoiler alerts on the convention banquet topic this year?
Well, I think we're going to talk about the nature of blindness and blind people. It's interesting. Not being visionary is not always about looking forward. It's also about considering where we've been and what we've missed about it, or what evolutions we've made. And I think there are some things to talk about that speak to where we should be going, but maybe some aspects of our history that haven't been covered in a way that maybe it would be helpful if they would be.
Okay.
So as much as that's a teaser.
No, that's good. That's more than I would.
You think that we've said everything there is to know about where we've been and what we've done, but I'm not sure we have.
Well, I'm surprised. You offered more up than I thought. So now I really am intrigued as to where we're going to go this year.
No, I just got to start writing something.
Good idea. Good idea. So to set the stage on next month's podcast, we're going to be asking our listeners to tell us about their magic moment, their magic convention moment, because we're going to talk more about the convention next month. So I'd like to know what your magic convention moment is. I would venture, 2014 was fairly magical when you became, when you were elected as the president of the National Federation of the Blind. I don't know if that's your magic moment, or do you have another or others you'd like to share?
Oh, there are probably many that could be shared, and they're all a little different. I've been fortunate to, of course, I've been at many conventions as a member where, some things, amazing presentations or some surprise moments have happened. Our 2007 March for Independence comes to mind as one where, this was something new and big and exciting that we were trying, and we had Congressman John Lewis
there. He was in the house.
And that sort of thing.
In the house.
And that was a good moment. I guess, though, I do have to come back to, I've been at the center of helping the organization stage some things at our convention. We had the Louis Braille coin that we got on the space shuttle in 2009, and during the convention we played the audio from the rocket launch, but shuttle launch. But we wanted to do better than that. We wanted to give people as close as we could in a ballroom the experience of what it's like to be at the launch. So we onboarded a whole bunch of speakers and subwoofers. So there are fun things like that.
It felt like we were actually there.
Yeah, it was close as you could get in a ballroom. But so I guess I would have to say I had this idea for our 75th anniversary that we should try to set a world record. And the world record evolved over time, and eventually Guinness said that the world record we wanted to set wasn't one that existed, but that the umbrella mosaic was an existing record and we could break that. And that turned out to be even better because it was an existing record. It was a mainstream record. We were thinking about doing originally a big Braille message with umbrellas.
Yeah.
And so that was my first convention as president. It was on the opening day of the general session, so I hadn't even had an opportunity to bring the gavel down. There was a moment there that I was standing outside while everything was coming together, wondering if we had done the right thing. It was hot. We expected it to take a while. That wasn't a problem. But when you're in charge, you worry about all the things you got to worry about, all of the 2,470-some people we had out there.
Yeah, it was a logistical challenge.
So, but it came together, and you know, I ran back in because I had to change out of whatever I was wearing to get into convention form and to bring the gavel down on time. But I was still a little. I thought it was great, but I was still a little worried. How did people really feel about being out there? I thought it was pretty cool, but I wasn't sure how other people felt about it. And then I listened to other people talk about it. And it's mm-hmm. funny. It's one of those, it's like giving birth, right? You know, it, at the moment you don't think so, but everybody universally afterward said, you know, yeah, it was hot. It was, I was hungry,
yeah.
but man, was it worth it. And I guess I really think that is symbolic of a lot of what we do together in this Federation family. There yeah. are sometimes that, you know, there, I don't want to go sell another raffle ticket, but man, that it helped
change the life of
someone
blind person
get
somewhere.
To that first convention and yeah. you see how they react. So I think the Umbrella Mosaic really represented the best of who we've been and the best of who we're going to be, really, all in one, from a 30,000 foot point of view.
Almost literally with the drone.
Yeah, the drone. So, and it's also a great story to tell. I'm sure there are 2,000 people that are going to now say that they were part of it, even though they weren't. And I'm also amazed that. Not amazed, but, you know, people know roughly, a lot of people know roughly where they were. Like, yeah, I was, you know, down to the left of the leg
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
yeah.
Wow, how did you even work that out? So pretty cool stuff.
That is cool. I mean, that surprises me, but it shouldn't surprise me. You know, most people are going to internalize this and have that magic moment that's specifically unique. But you chose one that was kind of a magic moment for the whole organization in a real way. So
at least if you were there.
It. yeah, that's true. But even if you weren't, I mean,
yeah,
just,
yeah.
you know, that's cool. That was awesome. Have anything you want to say before we close out this segment?
Well, it's been my privilege to be here.
Excellent.
No, just that on technology, I think we all need to continue to think about technology, talk about it. We need to be willing to embrace it, but we can't love it so much that we forget it's not the answer to yeah. our greatest problems. And that really the capacity that we have, the ability to think and react, to operate in the world without vision, and the resources we have in our organization as a network of blind people, with technology, we're definitely unstoppable. But even without technology, we have quite a bit, and we shouldn't think that technology is what gives us capacity.
There you go. Absolutely agree. Thank you for taking time, President Riccobono. To our listeners, I hope that you have learned something and it helps move you forward toward establishing your new pattern of thought. The banquet speech will be in the show notes. Until next month, well, I guess the next segment, you're listening to the Nation's Blind Podcast. And I'm back here with Melissa. It's always a pleasure, again, to take advantage of the opportunity to have the presidential privilege discussion with President Riccobono. I tend to really like, most of all, getting into that space where, I mean, I guess the way to put it is President Riccobono and I were friends long before he became President Riccobono. And it's so nice to be able to really recognize that we're still friends and able to have those kind of just comfortable discussions about things, because I think that helps him and it definitely helps me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So the magic convention moment, that was really interesting. I wouldn't have thought that, but that I'm glad that he put that out there. And we want you guys to start thinking about your magic convention moment as well.
Yes, we do. And you probably are noticing a pattern, because we want you to talk about your magic convention moment, because the theme of our next podcast will be convention.
There you go.
You know, convention registration is open. It's open up through May 31st. I have got to register.
Do it now.
The Riccobonos are bringing all three of our children this year to convention. We have not done that since 2014. So, yeah, it will be.
Now, registration is open till the end of, is it
May 31st?
Mm-hmm. But I'm going to tell you guys, book your rooms now.
Oh yeah, rooms are going.
Once they're gone, they're gone. They're not guaranteed through. Last year, I just waited thinking it was going to be just fine, and it was such a struggle post fact to get the hotel room. Get your rooms now.
Yes, no, get your rooms now. Really make a commitment if you're thinking about coming. Talk to other people. I mean, we want you to be there, and this is the last year we'll be in Florida for a while. So, especially if you haven't joined us yet in Florida, or you're thinking, oh, I'd kind of like to go to Florida and do such and such after or before convention. Our kids are lobbying very hard for Harry Potter World. So I think that we are going to take a couple of days after convention, not right after, because I said you've got to be crazy to go right from the banquet to Harry Potter World. I don't think that would be enjoyable for anybody.
You have to get some of that. What is that punch? The Harry Potter stuff.
Oh, butterbeer?
Yeah, you got to get some butterbeer.
Butterbeer? Yeah.
That's the Red Bull of the Harry Potter world.
Oh, I don't
know. No, it doesn't have high caffeine. It's a pretty delicious beverage.
I can't wait. Anyway, so please join us in Florida, but talk. Let's talk about our magic convention moments, because convention is an experience, a situation like none other. And really, I'm going to encourage you, because I think this lends itself particularly well, to actually giving us a call, 410-659-9314, extension 2444. We would love to use actual voicemails of you telling your convention story. Now, please, keep time in mind. There's only probably, I don't know how much we can record on our voicemail.
Definitely a limit to how much we're going to put on the podcast.
Right, so. But we would love to actually be able to have some actual stories in your own voices about your magical convention moments. And we would love to do that. So please give us a call.
Yeah, absolutely. And, we were talking about how our social media participation has increased. So keep that up as well. Yes. But as Melissa's pointing out, there's something that gets lost in the static representation of it. And if it's going to be a magic convention moment, we'd love to hear, the vocal inflection or the tone that's associated with the feeling that you got during that magic convention moment.
Definitely.
But still, tweet us on Twitter.
Yes. Yeah, tweet us at NFB underscore voice.
Uh-huh. What is it on Facebook?
Like us.
Follow us. All that on Facebook, the National Federation of the Blind.
Yep.
Email us at podcast@nfb.org. And we're looking forward to the continued communication and making sure that we can be responsive to what you feel we should be doing with the podcast as well.
Definitely.
So think about your magic convention moment. Melissa and I will share ours with you on the next broadcast of the Nation's Blind podcast.
We will. We will. Looking forward to it.
And until then, remember, you can live the life you want.
Blindness is not what holds you back.